Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Everybody, welcome to the Guy James Show, coming to you from a very, very stormy Southwest Florida right now. Just looking at the radar, and there's some bad stuff headed this way. So if yours truly disappears for a little bit, just hang loose. We'll be back as soon as we can restart everything, but there's no way out of it sometimes when there are these really bad storms. I mean, I'm looking at the local radar, and you know when they got the yellow and the green and all that coming. Well, there's a whole lot of red stuff getting ready to come over top of the studio here in just a little bit. So be aware of that. And all of you folks on the Internet, on the chat room, let all your friends know if they happen to come on that if we come up missing for a couple of minutes that we'll be back just as soon as we can. Usually takes, what, 3-4 minutes to reset everything. So there you go. Now that you know all of our technical problems, we don't have any at the moment, but Mom Nature's about to bring in, about to bring in a couple anyway. Oh, man. I'll tell you, what a day it's been. I got a call from a relative this morning, and I don't know if any of you have this sort of problem. Oh, and by the way, the official Guy James Show puppies, Kukla and Sophie, have come running into the studio, and they're looking at me like, oh, my God, Dad, what are we going to do? It's storming outside. And I know they will remain at my feet as long as there is a little bit of lightning and thunder and rain going on. They don't like it one bit. So here they are, and okay, Kukla, she's getting in a little hut I got over for her, and Sophie's right outside. So they're looking at me like, you will protect us, won't you? Of course I will. Of course. I was about to say, as long as I'm giving you all this inside information, I was about to say I got a call from a relative this morning that I haven't talked to in a while. And conversation went okay for a little while. And all of a sudden, he says to me, I don't usually, let me explain to you, this relative is a cousin, a first cousin, and is a fundy, okay? A fundy Republican that never fails to remind me every time I see him that the Democrats are a bunch of baby-killing monsters, all right? And he said, you know, I haven't listened to your show for a long time. But I listened the other day, and I heard you say some terrible things, and I wonder just what in the world is going on with you. And I'm somewhat taken aback by this. I said, going on with me? What are you talking about? You know how I feel about politics. Well, yeah, I know how you feel about politics, but I heard you say that you'd be for nationalizing the oil companies. Have you turned into a communist or something? Well, no, dear cousin, I haven't. And I proceeded to listen to this guy who really is one of these Republicans that doesn't have a pot, all right? Drives no car, lives in no house, barely makes it, like so many people. Nothing wrong with that. But here he stands, like so many Republicans I've heard, and over and over and over again, stand there defending big oil. You know, this is a capitalist country. And those oil companies have a right to make all the money they can make. Everybody's got a right to make all the money they can make. Well, you know, I'll agree with you, dear cousin, on some of that. We do have a right to make all the money we can make, in my opinion. Until our money-making happens to run roughshod over other people and destroy their lives. And then it becomes something that's not okay anymore. Then it becomes some super capitalism that endangers not just a few individuals, but the entire nation. Almost the entire nation, except that top 1% who enjoy a little more of the bounty than other people do. But what is it? What is it about these people that will stand and defend, no matter what, the rights of any corporation to just beat the hell out of the American public, especially big oil right now? What is it? I just don't understand it. I mean, I know we're all aware of the fact that somewhere between 22 and 25%, depending on which poll you look at, of the American voters still think George Bush is a good president. And my cousin does as well. And you think about that 22 to 25% of the American people who are, for all intents and purposes, self-admitted stupid assholes who listen to Rush Limbaugh and Hannity every day to find out from those two Nazis what the listeners ought to be thinking. And it's really crazy when you think about it, because we know that no matter how many tens of thousands of our troops Bush or McCain would send to get killed in Iraq for oil, no matter how many hundreds of thousands of innocent Iraqis get murdered, no matter how many lies Bush tells, no matter how many laws he's break, no matter how many of our civil liberties he takes away, still 22 to 25% of Americans still support him. And cousin or not, these people are not really normal human beings. They're some sort of protoplasmic robots who've been programmed by the propaganda of the right wing to follow orders, no matter if they're legal or not, ethical or not, moral or not. It doesn't matter to these people. They're just absolutely incapable of analyzing facts and forming decent conclusions from them, and they're not capable of independent thought. And that's the main thing I got out of this conversation with a relative this morning. And you can tell every time when they start spouting the machinations of Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly and Laura Ingraham, you know, you can hear it's as though they got that hand up their back that they're a stupid ass puppet and somebody's moving their jaws for them, somebody on the right. It fascinates me. I mean, these are the kind of people who can be convinced that the Easter Bunny's real and that the Tooth Fairy really does fly into bedrooms at night and buy used teeth. I mean, the people are really live zombies. You know, and then he starts in on this business about we've got a couple of relatives that are over in Iraq right now, and not actually in Iraq, but in Kuwait. Well, that's good. And although I have the greatest respect, and I've said this every time it comes up on this show, I got great respect for those who join the military and serve the country honorably. And I'm damn tired of hearing politicians telling us that our military is fighting for our freedom. They are not. Hey, I've been on this planet for quite a while now. And I have never seen a time when my freedoms could have been taken away by anyone outside of this country. I've never seen a serious effort from anybody outside of this country to take away my freedoms. The only people who have infringed upon my freedoms are American politicians, corporations, and judges. No foreigner has ever taken my freedoms away. So if the military wants to protect my freedoms, I suggest they encircle the White House and keep Bush from doing any more damage to my freedoms and to the Constitution of the United States. But I'd like to know, and the question today to you is, do you run across this? Do you run across people who just blindly mouth the talking points of the right wing, and you look at them and there's just emptiness inside their eyes, and you know they're fools? You know they don't know what they're talking about. They're just capable of remembering something that Limbaugh or Hannity or Ingram or O'Reilly or the host of others, Neil Bortz, all of them. They're able to remember what these people said and repeat it. And I would be so embarrassed. I would be so embarrassed to have somebody else form my thoughts for me. Isn't that what it's all about? You have ears, you have eyes, in whatever way you take in and process information in your brain, and you take it all in, no matter how you can. Even if you're blind, you can hear. If you're blind, you find there is a way for everybody to take in information and process it in their brain. All of us. But isn't it a shame that some people aren't able to? They can take in the information, but they aren't able to process it. They just aren't able to come up with their own conclusions. They're only capable of listening to what somebody else says and then throwing that out to you and acting like it was an independent thought when you know damn well you just heard it this morning coming out of the mouth of one of those people or from the list of, from the RNC, from the Republican talking points, which you get every morning. Fascinating. Just absolutely fascinating. I don't think I'll ever understand how anybody could be that damn dumb. I really don't. Now, I'm sorry to sit here, and I'm not making fun. I'm really not. I'm just telling you what I see and what I hear. And sometimes it's just embarrassing. It's just plain embarrassing. 866-546-5254. Dude, the weather is nice out. Yes, it is. I had something I was going to mention just now, and it got away from me real quick. I did want to mention that John McCain hasn't voted in the United States Senate since April the 8th. That's, 2.5 months? A little over 2.5 months. John McCain hasn't voted in the United States Senate for 2.5 months. He became the most absent member of the Senate. He missed 367 votes, 61.4% during the current Congress. All right, I know. Obama's missed a lot of votes. Hillary Clinton missed a lot of votes. All the people out running for presidency missed a lot of votes. And that really pisses me off. I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican. You're getting paid, what is it, $167.5, something like that, as a senator of the United States of America. Tell me something. If you're out there working at Walmart, or you're out there working at Home Depot down the street, or you're waiting tables, or no matter what you're doing, out working for the cable pump company, checking the lines, whatever you're doing, and you're making $30,000 a year, whatever it is you make, can you just call your boss and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to run for county commissioner this year. And I'm not going to be around very much, okay? Be sure, instead of having me pick up the paycheck at the office, send it to my home, will you? Here's the address. Send it to my home. But I'm not going to be around very much this year. But you keep sending me my paycheck. Now, I understand that these people don't want to quit the Senate of the United States to run for the presidency. I understand that. They got this fat-ass plump job, and they want to keep it no matter what. Very few people ever quit that job until they're so old and infirm that they can't even do it anymore. There are very few Strom Thurmonds around, though. So, why don't they just forego their pay during this time? I mean, they're not doing their job. You know damn well John McCain and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton and all the rest of them that ran for the presidency this time. You know they weren't doing their job to their full capacity. You know they weren't. McCain most of all. So why don't you just tell the American people, you know what? I'm not going to take advantage of you anymore and I have to. I will sign a waiver that I will forego my pay while I'm out running for the presidency of the United States. Isn't that fair? Wouldn't that be fair? I'm not being biased here. I'm not being partisan here. It goes for both sides. I don't see how, I don't see why you should get your pay if you're not doing your job. I don't get it. Oh, they're going to say, well, my office is open, all my people are there, and that's another thing. I'm paying all those people. My job's open and the people are there and they're telling me what's going on. They're letting me know what's going on. And I go back for all the important votes. Hey. That's not what it's all about. That's not what it's all about. You're paid to do a job. You're elected to do a job. And if you can't do it, you shouldn't get paid for it. I'm not going to sit here and demand that you ought to drop out of office while you're running for the presidency. I won't go that far, but I damn well want you to sign a waiver signing over your pay. It's not right. It's just not right. And here you are, living like a king. Most of the senators, most of them are very wealthy people to begin with and don't even need that 167.5 or 167 or whatever it happens to be right now. A lot of them need it like a hole in the head, and I could start naming names, and you know who they are. Rich beyond belief. And I'm not even begrudging them that. But I just think it's a damn shame that the American public, you know, they talk about pork, they talk about wasted money, and I know it's only a drop in the bucket when it comes to the broad scheme of things. But right is right and wrong is wrong. I don't expect them to ever do anything about it because, after all, they're the ones, you know, they're... It's like the, you know, the wolf guarding the chicken house. I mean, that's... That's basically what it is. So, anyway, John McCain, the most absent senator, 61.4. I bet Obama probably isn't far behind, and Hillary isn't far behind that. But again, I'm not picking on any particular person there. I just think they all, there ought to be a deal. You're going to run, sign over your pay. All right, I'm not going to say anything else about it. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. If you'd like to join us, 866-546-5254. And if you got one of those unlimited call-in plans and you want to use some of your minutes that they won't cost you anything, 941-876-6896. 6896. Love to have you join the program today. I see Rush Limbaugh. Said that Charlie Black was correct. A terror attack would help McCain. Limbaugh took that argument in another direction and said there'd be no terrorist attack before the November election because the terrorists want Obama to win. The terrorists want Obama to win. I love that one. I really do. The terrorists want Obama to win. One of the more foolish things I think a person could say. The terrorists want Obama to win. Has he been over and talked to the terrorists? Does he know? Does he know what they want? They talk to all of them, and, you know, I mean, every time the Republicans run for office, every time, no matter who the bad guy in the world is, no matter who it happens to be at the time, the boogeyman of the day, whether it's Kim Jong-il or Nikita Khrushchev or Mao Zedong or whoever, the Antichrist, whoever the bad guy is in the world, Republicans always come in and say, you know, that bad guy is wanting those Democrats to get elected. Yes, sir. Fidel Castro and Chavez and Hamas and Hezbollah and all those people, they want the Democrats to get elected because they know they'll just be able to walk right in, open the door to this country, walk in and take it over if the Democrats are the president. Funny, they've never gotten it done, have they? Bill Clinton, they used that on Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton got elected twice. And I could be wrong, but I don't recall any of those people coming in and taking over the country while Bill Clinton was president of the United States. But whoever the Democrat is, oh yeah, whoever it is, the other side is wanting those Democrats to win so that because they know they can just walk right over them and take over this country. And that bitch, Laura Ingraham, and I'm sorry, I just get angry when I talk about people like her. She's such a bitch. She comes out and says that, and says that Kim Jong-il is for Barack Obama. Now I see we're taking Kim Jong-il off the big terrorist list. Okay, he's a much better guy now. He's turned over a new leaf. but you know, she's been saying that Kim Jong-il is for Obama and Hamas is for Obama and all these people are for Obama. And Kim Jong-il has been taken off the terror watch list. It just fascinates me that people actually come up and say this. It really does. I don't know. I think someone ought to, you know, anybody, of course, it would be ridiculous for me to actually think this could happen, but one would think somebody over on the Republican side would be just a little bit smarter, that they might actually be smart enough to know that these bad guys support would harm a candidate and you know, they'd express some sort of a fondness for those that they would like to win. But who would ever accuse the Republicans of being smart enough to figure that out? I mean, I certainly wouldn't. I guess I've picked on Republicans enough today, haven't I? No? Okay. The president General William Odom says, a very highly respected former head of National Security Agency, the NSA, under Ronald Reagan. We're not talking about any old guy in stripes here. We're talking about General William Odom. He says, and let me quote him, "The President, George W. Bush, is strongly motivated to string out the Iraq war until he leaves office, in order to take and to avoid taking responsibility for the defeat he has caused and persisted in making greater each year for more than 3 years." This quote from retired General William Odom, former NSA head. And King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, Bush's buddy, you know, you've seen him holding hands and exchanging kisses. He said, "In beloved Iraq, blood is flowing between brothers. in the shadow of an illegitimate foreign occupation and abhorrent sectarianism threatens a civil war. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia, March 29, 2007. And another quote, after this war against Iraq has ended, the United States will have to rebuild much more than the country of Iraq. We will have to rebuild America's image around the globe. That's from Senator Robert Byrd, March 19, 2003. I don't think a lot of people done at the time understood just how wise Robert Byrd was about the situation. He seemed to know what was coming. And the Iraqi parliament is on record as being against the U.S.-led military occupation of their country. I think we all know that by now, except the Republicans haven't figured it out yet, or they don't want to figure it out. And moreover, most Iraqis, according to all the polls that have been taken, all of them, most Iraqis resent Americans occupying their country and the Bush-Cheney administration's request to do it forever by maintaining almost 60 military bases in their country. What citizen of any country in the world would like that? And the Bush administration's even threatened their own puppet Iraqi government to keep some of their $50 billion of Iraqi money held in our Federal Reserve Bank in New York if the Iraqi government doesn't go along with all... Everybody knows that by now. He used this authorization of force the wrong way, in an illegal way. And one thing people better keep in mind, and you better figure the administration better figure out, and I'm sure will figure out a way to get around this, is that the UN mandate that authorizes an American presence in Iraq expires on December 31st of this year. December 31st. That's how Bush has gotten by all this time, staying there. Hey, we have that UN mandate, and we can stay there until December 31st of 2008. After that date, there will be no legal basis for U.S. military forces to be on Iraqi soil. None whatever. And after that, the Iraqi government should regain its entire authority. And so now the Bushes and Cheneys are shoving this agreement with them, this security agreement, which would not require approval by the U.S. Congress because it wouldn't technically be a treaty. And that's playing with words. But they want to keep the Iraqis down. They want to keep their boot on the Iraqis. They want to keep their authority down to almost nothing. And they want to concentrate most of the political power in American hands. That's what it's about. And why? Well, I think we all know why, don't we? I think we all know exactly why. And we'll talk about that today. Why? You know the whys and the wherefores, why we're in Iraq. It's because we wanted to plant democracy and freedom. Because we, as a good and benevolent and loving nation, want to help other countries enjoy all the freedoms that we have. And so, therefore, the Bush and Cheney administration decided to go to Iraq and said, you know, you people are being oppressed and we're going to help you out. Yeah, we're going to help you out. And we've been noticing, we've been looking, and we see that you're suffering under an oppressive regime. And so I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to come in here, and we're just going to blow the hell out of your country, okay? Now stick with us on this. We're going to come in, and we're just going to blow the hell out of your country. It'll be a little inconvenient for a while, not too long. And as soon as we do that, come on over to the gates of Baghdad and everything, and greet us as liberators, all right, with flowers and everything. I'm sure you will. But we're going to come in, and we're going to blow up your electrical grids. We're going to blow up your sewage systems. We're going to blow up your bridge, your roads. We're going to disband your army. We're going to disband your police. We're going to totally turn your lives upside down. But don't you worry. Don't you worry. When we're done, after a few years, we're going to come in and rebuild everything. We'll see that it's rebuilt. We got these companies, maybe you don't know the names of them, but their names are like, for example, Bechtel and Halliburton and KBR, so just to name a few. And they're good, reliable companies, and we're going to have them come in, and they're going to rebuild your whole country. I mean, you're going to have things that you never dreamed of. You're going to have four-lane highways going everywhere, and you're going to have brand-new bridges and running water and electric. I mean, it's going to be great. So stick with us just a little while we can. Yeah, and I know, and we hate to mention this, probably going to get a couple of dozen of you folks killed. Because sometimes when we drop bombs, we're not able to be, so forgive us for that. But all in all, what we're going to do is we're going to come in and we're going to get rid of this Saddam Hussein, and your life is going to be so damn good after that. Because we're going to plant democracy in your country. That's what kind of people we are. We want to help you out. Because we love you. Because we're America. And any place we see that people are oppressed, we want to come in and help. Now, there is this one thing. We noticed, we're not sure, but we noticed and we've heard that you folks have some oil. Is that true? You folks, black gold, they call it over here in our country. You folks have some of that, right? Okay. Well, we thought so. We're going to help you with that. I know that you've pumped quite a lot of it from what we hear, but evidently you're not doing a really good job of it. So when we come over and help you, and we've got these companies, they're like called ExxonMobil, and there's a BP and a Shell and like companies like that. Maybe you've heard of them because when the British were occupying you folks' country many years ago, why, these guys were in there, were pumping that oil. These same companies, and that old Saddam Hussein threw them out. And man, that was bad. That was really bad. So these are really good people. Take our words for it, these oil folks. And we're going to help them come on in there, and they're going to show you how to really pump this oil. And you guys will make so much money. We're going to build a Disneyland right downtown. Yeah, no kidding. Downtown Baghdad, we're going to build a Disneyland, and we're going to you got this ghetto in there called Solder City. We're going to put a big wall around that so nobody see that. We might even paint it some pretty colors and stuff and plant some flowers on it. So when we come in there, just want you to know, it might take a few months, but we're going to make your country, man, everybody in the world is going to be like a rock when we're done there. And don't worry about that oil. Don't you worry about that. We'll take care of that for you. Yes, we will. And you're going to be so happy that we've come to help you out. Yes, indeed. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join the program today. And we'll be back in just a minute or two.
John McCain has done more than just embrace George Bush's failed policy in Iraq. It's actually his idea to escalate the war there. It's John McCain's idea to send tens of thousands more soldiers to Iraq and to keep them there with no timeline for bringing them home. The McCain plan to escalate, going from bad to worse.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100. That'd be fine with me.
President Bush has talked about our staying in Iraq for 50 years.
Maybe 100.
If all he offers is more of the same, is John McCain the right choice for America's future? The Democratic National Committee is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Well, I'm a miracle.
where is everyone today? Yes, I know when they're not here. You know, one of the great things about doing internet radio is all you got to do is look at your gauges and dials. You can tell exactly how many people are listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I can tell when you aren't there, too, see? Each and every one of you. I got a big list here. And I put gold stars on it and everything. And you know, if you got perfect attendance and... Well, not quite to that extent, but I know when what the audience is. And today we're... People are missing today. I'm going to take another look at here at the radar and see how we're doing with this nasty storm that's coming this way. Still, let's see here. Yeah, it's still... we're not out of the woods, that's for sure. All right. 866-546-5254. I got a story sent to me this morning. Very often people do send me stories that they think would be interesting for the program. And not only is the story interesting, it brought tears to my eyes. And it may to you as well. Because you wonder sometimes what kind of monsters there are in this world. And you wonder, most specifically right now, what I'm going to talk about is, since the military, our U.S. military, most of them honorable and good people, the biggest majority of them honest and good people and decent and ethical and moral. But as you well know, in order to meet recruitment standards, recruitment standards have been lowered considerably. They're letting felons into the military. They're letting some people in that psychologically should never be allowed to hold a weapon or be around other people in a somewhat closed society like the military. And I was sent this story this morning. It was written by a lady named Tracy Barnett out of New Zealand for a New Zealand newspaper. And I'm going to take a couple of minutes and read you this story because this is serious stuff. And you've heard about this. I don't know if you've heard about this specific case. But after I read this, I thought, oh, my God. People are recruited to help us out. They're recruited to do the bidding of the commander-in-chief. They go do it. And this is how they end up. And let me read you this story. Women GIs in fear of the enemy in their army. When Dr. John Johnson finally brought himself to look at the slain body of his beautiful 19-year-old daughter flown home from Iraq, he knew immediately that he was looking at murder. This was no suicide from a self-inflicted M16 wound, as the military would later claim. Private Lavenna Johnson's nose was broken. Her teeth were loose. One eye was concave, and there were abrasions over her body. The supposed M16 hole to the head was far too small for the revolver-sized exit wound, and was on the wrong side of her skull for a right-handed woman to have pulled the trigger. Her genital area showed evidence of acid, perhaps used to destroy DNA evidence. She had white military gloves glued to her burned hands. And when I asked Lavina's mother if she felt her daughter's case was being covered up by the United States military, she replied without hesitation, "Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind." 3 years after her daughter's body had been flown home from Iraq, it was still too painful for Linda Johnson to describe the first moments when she realized her daughter had been raped, shot, burned with acid, then dumped in a contractor's tent and set on fire. She said, "I'm telling you, there is no pain like it. There is no pain like it in this world. My daughter, the way they took her, and what they did to her, it's inhuman. I did not believe my daughter was placed among a group of predators. They treated her like an animal, Linda Johnson said, and added quietly, and she was fighting for this country. When the coroner ruled her death a suicide and failed to include any of the physical trauma in his report, Dr. Johnson told him, "Somebody murdered my daughter, and you picked the wrong person to F with." It reads like next year's Oscar-winning screenplay, but there's no real-life ending in sight. The death was initially taped off as a crime scene, but the investigation was shut down by a general's order. The Johnsons are still fighting for answers. It was only recently when they met anti-war activist retired Colonel Ann Wright, that is the same Ann Wright that we've had on this program, that there has been a flicker of movement. Her contacts got Dr. Johnson an audience with the Congress. Since then, he's received word that Lavenna's case may make it on the congressional agenda. Tragically, the Johnson family are not alone. This is no single aberrant case. John Johnson has discovered far more stories that have matched his daughter's than he ever wanted to know. 10 other families of, quote, suicide female soldiers have contacted him. The common thread among them? Rape. Meet today's U.S. military. Sign up for the armed services and become almost one in three women who are raped or sexually assaulted by their own colleagues, according to the Department of Defense statistics. It's not exactly the kind of recruitment slogan that fills empty boots. And upon returning home, these same women will be 9 times more likely to suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. A RAND Corporation study noted that the returning women veterans are suffering from more such stress than men, but no one thought to ask how much of it is from being raped by the comrades who are supposed to be watching your back. Women's veteran groups describe how some women are coerced by higher-ups to use their bodies to obtain food or generators out in the field as part of what they call command rape. In 2003, three women died in their beds of dehydration because they had stopped drinking in the terrible heat late in the day for fear of having to go to the latrine at night. Camp generators were so loud they would muffle the sound of women's screams as their own soldiers jumped them and dragged them to the porta-johns to be assaulted. Fathers like John Johnson set their daughters off to war, assuming that the enemy was on the other side of the divide. And for the vast majority of recruits, it is. But Colonel Wright points to specific Army units and bases that have an inordinate number of women soldiers who have died of non-combat related injuries or suicides, both of which are never counted in the U.S. official death toll. Dr. Johnson has told the United States Senate the name of one of the men who he believes murdered his daughter. A high-ranking officer was kicked out of Iraq 2 days after his daughter was found dead. He said if this had been a private, they would have thrown him under the bus a long time ago. All he wants is justice for his daughter. And as a third-generation military man, he knows only too well, know your enemies. The real tragedy today is that almost one-third of American female soldiers can't begin to answer that question. What do you say about a story like that? What do you say? We know that contractors. We know that American military personnel, we know people in Iraq have been involved in murder. Been hardly anybody brought to justice. It's too messy, isn't it? It's too messy. Might make the whole operation look bad. And we can't have that because we've got a product to sell. We've got a war to sell. The wonderful gift of democracy to the people in Iraq. Let's face it. America has suffered. Iraq has suffered. The people of both nations have suffered over this. And when stories like this come out and there's no resolution to them, and when stories about the couple of massacres that have taken place over there and there's no resolution, and you hear about private canned contractors driving through the streets and shooting it up and killing people and there's no resolution, I wonder what kind of people that we have running this country. We wonder what kind of people will let things like this go and not make people accountable for it. Has anybody been accountable for anything? And I hate to funnel everything down to politics, but you know that old Harry Truman sign on the desk, the buck stops here? When has anybody been accountable for anything? Didn't we hear that over and over and over again during the run for the presidency of Ronald Reagan, of Bush Daddy, of Junior Bush twice? Haven't we heard that these people are the party of personal responsibility? And can you tell me any responsibility they have taken for anything? Anything. They out a CIA agent. It's not our fault. We've got 4,200 and some troops killed in Iraq. Hey, we, you know, doing the right thing over there. They're breaking laws in the Justice Department. Hey, I don't know who, I don't know. We got an economy in the crapper. Law after law broken by Bush administration people. The war and the occupation gone badly. It's gone so badly in Iraq, it's bled over into an Afghanistan because they can't afford to do in an Afghanistan the thing they ought to be doing is hunting for Osama bin Laden. Who's responsible for any of this? Who? Have you heard anybody? Have you heard anybody take personal responsibility for anything during this administration? Anything at all. Anything. I challenge anybody to call me and tell me, if you're on the other side of this, you call me and tell me of anything that has taken place that has gone wrong in this administration from the very beginning, from the first day, one goddamn thing that you can think of that went wrong that anybody took personal responsibility for. One thing, that's all I'm asking for. Because you know I'm right, you won't call. Because there has been no responsibility taken by anybody for anything that's gone wrong. And believe me, as you well know, there's been a whole hell of a lot go wrong. Makes me sick. Just makes me sick. Take a break.
The sun's done gone, no hammer, no light. The moon and the man will be rolling all night. Scorpio's up a leading old into pasture. And the hour's behind. miles between can begin to undo the feeling that you will never see another like her. Down the lonesome ways and the young and foolish days, and the kid who made the man
with you here on the Guy James Show. Let me turn to something a little less serious. A lot less serious, actually. I ran across a story that last night as I was reading newspapers around the internet, and I ran across a story, and I thought, oh, I've got to tell them about this. San Francisco Gate.com, San Francisco Chronicle. Maybe you've heard about this. It's the first news I had of it. if you've ever attended an event or festival in San Francisco lately, or even just hung out in the city park, you've probably seen them. Admittedly, they're hard to miss. Someone in the group is usually toting a large American flag, and another is often carrying a boombox, blaring patriotic music. Sometimes one of them dresses up as Uncle Sam. And they are the Presidential Memorial Commission of San Francisco. But don't let the serious name fool you. The group's intentions are in the gutter. They want to rename the Oceanside Water Pollution Control Plant the George W. Bush Sewage Plant come January when the next president is sworn in. And they're serious about this. They went in and got over 8,500 signatures to get it on the ballot. 1,300 more than they need, and they've got to verify these, and they're getting it done. And they want to name the San Francisco sewage plant after George W. Bush. And I think that is one hell of a good idea. Now, they say they're getting opposition from Democrats who don't think anything should be named after Mr. Bush. And, of course, the Republicans are saying they're going to stop this by any means necessary. Have you ever? I love this. I love this. The guy says 50 years from now in a civics class, students will learn about the Lincoln Memorial, the other presidents are on Mount Rushmore, and George W. Bush got a sewage plant. It'll prompt people to ask why. And then they can discuss the Iraq War and everything that led to it. People want to forget bad moments in history, and this is our way of making sure that doesn't happen. Yes. To be fair, there are already other tributes to President Bush, including a Stockton Elementary School. Now, can you imagine having to go to a school named after George W. Jr. Bush? Can you imagine that? The shame, the humiliation when you're asked where you went to school and you say, I went to George W. Bush School. That would be a good one, wouldn't it? But now people are going to say when they work down at the sewage plant, I work at the George W. Bush sewage plant. Yes, sir. I think that's very fitting. He's been full of it for a long time, along with most other people in his administration. I like the idea, and I've got to hand it to the folks from San Francisco with coming up with such a great thing, and more power to them. I guess they're going to be able to get it on the ballot. And all their hard work is paying off. Get it, that baby on the ballot, and let's vote it in. I think I'd make the trip out there just to take pictures of a sign out in front of a sewage plant saying the Memorial George W. Bush Sewage Plant. I'd have to have a picture of that, wouldn't you? Ah, yes. You listen to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Newton Network. Be back right after the news.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The housing crash in the U.S. is wiping out wealth that baby boomers could have relied on in retirement. A new report from the Center for Economic and Policy Research says due to the housing bubble collapse, the vast majority of people who were ages 45 through 54 in 2004 have accumulated little or no wealth. Report co-author Dean Baker says this extraordinary destruction of wealth has tremendous implications for families as they enter retirement. Because there's also a very low savings rate, the report says this means many baby boomers will have just Social Security and Medicare to rely upon in retirement. This report was released as former GAO Comptroller David Walker testified before the House Budget Committee about a proposal to cut Social Security and Medicare benefits for future retirees. Workers with Unite Here Local 1 recently marked the fifth year of their strike against the Congress Hotel, the longest-running active strike in the country. The workers went on strike in June of 2003 against wage cuts. Other union hotel workers in Chicago now earn $13.90 an hour, while the Congress still pays just $8.83. Unite Here Local 1's Henry Tamarin says the workers aren't giving up, despite the damage inflicted by owners of the Congress Hotel.
The Congress Hotel has inflicted injustice on our community for 5 years. It's absolutely awful what they have done to this community and to their workers.
San Francisco was held up as a reluctant model in light of a new study showing cities dealing heavily with health care issues. Jesse Russell reports.
The theme of the Families USA survey released on Monday is that when it comes to healthcare, cities can't do it on their own. San Francisco has taken unique steps to cope with a growing number of citizens without health care. The city has a universal health care system that provides access for uninsured regardless of pre-existing conditions. But San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom said his city's model is not ideal.
This, I do believe, should be the responsibility of the state of California and the federal government. But in the absence of that responsibility being advanced through real solutions, we've had to step up and step in.
Newsom said that until the state or federal government takes responsibility, the cost to his city and others will only increase.
We are increasing our investment every year to a degree that it is taking away from other vital resources, taking away from other vital priorities.
Here's today's economic report. A new record has been set, and it isn't a good one. Home prices in 20 major U.S. cities are down 15.3% over last year. The biggest drops were in Las Vegas, Miami, and Phoenix, with prices falling as much as 25% in those three cities. Projections of the 20-city index have home prices dropping another 15 to 20% between now and the end of 2009.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, John, I just heard you got a new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What will you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
If you don't clean up your room, the Board of Health is going to condemn it.
The Board of Health doesn't even know about your room. What's more, they don't care.
You know, if you keep making that face, it's going to freeze that way.
Not unless you're someplace really, really cold. Actually, a lot of the warnings moms hand out are a bit exaggerated.
If you don't get your blood pressure checked, you could have high blood pressure, not even know it, and you could die from a stroke.
But she's right about that one. Fact is, high blood pressure contributes to 200,000 American deaths each year, and a third of those who have high blood pressure don't know it. If they did, it'd be simple to treat. Call the American Heart Association at 1-800-AHA-USA1 or visit AmericanHeart.org on the web to learn more. Better still, ask your doctor to check your blood pressure.
If you run without scissors,
it's the least you can do.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Sounds every Saturday night, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. You'll hear the latest in new music releases, special segments like One Hit Wonders, Under the Covers, and Night Sounds dedications with the sassy and classy Erica Richards. For requests and dedications, direct your email to nightsounds@billyshearsmusic.com. So tune in and stop by the chat room this Saturday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Thanks for lending an ear.
Throw the second switch! Throw the third switch!
Not the third switch!
Throw it, I say! Throw it!
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well,
This is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show. America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, we're back. And thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show today. Stormy conditions outside as we are internet radio. If we come up missing for a minute, you know the old lightning and thunder got going real good around here. The radar's looking real bad. Looked like there's a real patch of it coming. It's raining pretty hard here right now here in Southwest Florida. Hey, thanks for joining us today. I noticed there's a conversation going on the internet about writing. And I wonder if many of you suffer from the same malady that I'm suffering from. I never did have good penmanship. Never. I mean, if I really, really, really take my time, I can write half decent. But normally, just normal, you know, normal speed writing, my writing is terrible. But since the advent of computers, and since that I do almost all of my communications at the keyboard, oh my God, I'm sitting here, and the reason I thought I'd bring this up, I'm sitting here looking at some notes that I made this morning that neither I nor anyone else in this entire world could understand what this says. I really don't know. I don't know whether it's I scribble because it's a speed thing. I guess it's a speed thing, but my writing is horrible. Really, really horrible. So I don't know. I don't know what the cure for that is. I guess to give up a pen altogether and type everything. You know, that is one thing that when I was in high school, I rode the school bus to school every day. Yes, I'm a country boy, and we rode the school bus, got on the school bus about 6:45 every morning, and school lasted and didn't get out till 4 o'clock, so we got home about like 5:10. It was a long day. And my bus driver, it was a very small school, very, very small school. My bus driver happened to be the teacher of all the business classes. And one day, and I got good grades in school, and I was sitting right behind him. He and I talked a lot. And I was kind of making fun of his, what I said were candy-ass classes, you know, econ and business and shorthand and all that, and typing. And he says, oh, you think typing's a candy class? And I said, well, of course it is. You know, it was all girls. And he says, well, I'll tell you what, I'll just challenge you to take my typing class. And you just see, Mr. Big Shot, if you think you can take the typing class and you can pass one of my classes, it'll be a miracle. I'm that tough. And so, you know, me, I'm going, well, all right. I had all the, I had plenty of credits to spare and all that. So I thought, okay, I'll take his typing class. And I did. And I got an A in typing. And I don't know, I took to it like a duck to water. And I can type much, much, much faster than I can write. Always could. And, in fact, I beat all the girls but one, Elaine. Couldn't beat Elaine typing. But anyway, that's how I earned my way in college, was typing term papers for other people. Oh, yeah. 10 cents a page in those days. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. You're sitting there typing a whole page for a dime. Ah, yes. Well, anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But it is the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. It is rather disconcerting, isn't it, to hear the news and hear them talking about the 15%, another 15%, the value, I mean, of your home. And a lot of people were counting on the value of their homes kind of being their retirement. That's how it usually goes. People downsize, you know, in some cases, and it's kind of their retirement fund. Well, it didn't work out. The old retirement fund for a lot of folks been flushed down the toilet. And just imagine, like somebody cutting off 15% of your house. That's what happened last year. I live in one of those areas. Oh, yes. They talk about Phoenix, and they talk about Las Vegas, and they talk about Miami. Well, that goes all the way across to the other west coast of Florida as well. Price values here, prices on homes have just hit the absolute rock bottom. I hope they're at rock bottom, although, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think they are at rock bottom yet, because the reason I know that is the vultures haven't moved in yet. And when the vultures haven't moved in yet, that means they're still waiting for the meat to rot a little bit more before they want to start their picking. So they must believe that we have not yet seen the bottom in this area. I don't understand. There are homes here being sold, and I'm not kidding. When this bubble burst, this real estate bubble burst, and I knew a lot of people that didn't think it could keep going the way it was, but still, they didn't think it would crash like it did. But developers, it doesn't make me feel so stupid, because developers were building homes at a phenomenal rate. You couldn't drive around here without dump trucks and cement trucks slowing you down. I mean, they were just, you know, battalions of them everywhere. And so all these huge developments being built, and a lot of them are sitting there unsold. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of properties, thousands actually, of properties in this county of Florida, brand new, that have not been sold. And I have noticed some developers selling properties for 50 to 60% of what they were asking for them. 50 to 60% and still not selling them. Still not selling them. So, I don't know. I don't know where this real estate market is going. I hope it doesn't travel down too much further. A lot of people having a terrible problem with it. Just a terrible problem with it. 866-546-5252 if you'd like to join the program, and we would love to have you join the program. You know, despite the problems with the economy, despite the housing problem and the slowdown of cars, and by the way, there's a huge Ford dealer up the road. Huge Ford dealer. And they're just acres of SUVs and pickup trucks sitting there. And I go by the GMC dealer, and I see acres of GMC trucks and SUVs sitting there. They're just thick everywhere. And if you got one that you just use for basic transportation, just try and get rid of it right now. If you don't absolutely have to have your truck or your SUV, try and get rid of it right now. I mean, they're sitting on the used car lots for practically nothing. Never been such a time to get. I mean, you can get, what did I see? 72 months no interest on a SUV at a dealership up the road here? 72 months no interest. My God, I remember when 3 years for a car loan was a long time. Hey, let's see where we're at. Oh, someone's calling in here. I'll wait for just a second. I think I've got this automatic thing set for too long. It must ring about six times before it picks up. Keep that in mind if you call. I'm going to have to change that. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I'm going to start by going back to the sad time, and then I'll start to go back to your other.
All right.
Of course, the housing situation is very sad. But you were talking about that girl that got murdered.
Yes.
I don't know who it was, and I didn't see the whole thing, but when Bush was over in Europe, and I guess this was a broadcaster from England or Britain
mm-hmm.
who was interviewing him. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, he was asking some pretty hard questions, and he got around to saying something about Abu Ghraib. And Bush said, oh, well, that was just a bunch of soldiers.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just a bunch of soldiers, just a few renegades there, just a couple people.
He's got his nerve.
Yes. Yes, he does.
He's the most nervy person I've ever seen.
Oh, he is. He absolutely is. I agree with you.
You know, most people that, as many people that don't like him, and the rotten things he has done to this country and to the other countries, most people would be kind of ashamed.
Yeah, wouldn't you be ashamed? Wouldn't you act a little more contrite?
Right, but he is just as happy as he can be.
Oh, yeah. Well, he, in his mind, he's a legend, you know.
Yeah. But I'm all for, like, that thing in San Francisco. Let's name all the septic tanks after him.
I think it'd be a wonderful deal.
They are.
I do. I think it would just be just the best doggone thing. I love
it. That's the kind of honor he deserves.
Yes, it is. It is. It is. Thanks for your call, Juanita. Good to hear from you.
Welcome.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, I did want to mention this briefly. Headlines in the newspaper here. Perhaps you've heard this story. U.S. sugar, big, huge, monster sugar production place just east of us here, not too far, over by Lake Okeechobee in Clewiston, Florida. Lake Okeechobee, I think it's the biggest freshwater lake in the United States. Anyway, it's a huge place, and over there, U.S. Sugar's got, oh, geez, how many acres? 18,000? 187,000? I should have written down the number. I think it's 187,000 acres. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And it's sugar cane. And you can just drive over there and you can see miles and miles and miles of cane. And never thought I'd like to work in those cane fields. There are a lot of snakes in there. Just never thought I'd enjoy that very much. But miles and miles and miles of cane. And it seems that the state of Florida, Charlie Crist, our beloved governor here, and I say that with tongue firmly planted in cheek, for me anyway. Charlie Crist and the state of Florida, they're going to buy for $1.8 billion, I believe is the figure. I should have brought that newspaper to the studio today, and I didn't. I think it's $1.87 billion or somewhere in that neighborhood. They're going to buy all this land from U.S. Sugar, who's having financial problems anyway. And have screwed over their employees in a huge way by them, by the way. $1.87 billion, and they're going to buy this so that they have better water flow through the Everglades and all that. Now, I'm not necessarily against that. If this all works out and it's all on the up and up, and if it's a fair price, and I really haven't delved in that today, but if it's a fair price and a fair deal and all that, well, fine. But how can you cuss me out and yell at me and disparage my good name for being a commie or a socialist because I called for the nationalization of oil companies when we've got the state of Florida going to buy 187,000 acres? Huh? Isn't that socialistic? You bet it is. There are times when it's necessary, and if that's good for the greater good of the people of Florida to do that, and it's all legal on the up and up, and it's a fair price, fine, let's do it. I feel the same way. I feel the same way about the oil companies. The same way. The only thing is they'd be pressured into it, but it's for the greater good of the people of the United States. There are some things in this country that are naturally socialistic. Maybe you don't like that word. Your roads are socialistic. Your sewage plants are socialistic. Your water plants are socialistic. Everything, so many things are socialistic in this country. So let's not run from that. So don't be people yelling at me when the government's going to buy all that land for the greater good of the people of Florida. And the water tables here and all that, and it is a good thing. Anyway, that's just how two-faced people are so many of the time. I was talking about the economy a minute ago, and I did want to let everybody know that it's not bad everywhere. And we talk about these greedy, gluttony oil companies and all the profits that they've made, and their CEOs and the people making millions, tens of millions of dollars, just more damn money than they know what to do with. Soaring oil and gas prices may be a fiscal drag on much of the nation, but in Houston, they're feeling an economic surge. Few places have flourished like Houston, home to hundreds of oil exploration, engineering, and oil service firms, including such giants as Baker Hughes and Halliburton. The Chicago Tribune reports, here in Houston, Maserati sales are up 86% so far this year, according to the TexAuto Facts report. Chanel and Yves Saint Laurent are expanding their luxury stores at the Galleria Shopping Mall. New construction permits in the city have jumped by almost 30%. The region added more than 100,000 jobs last year, and the mayor just proposed a dream budget for next year featuring more cops and lower property taxes. He said, "We know that everybody's talking about a recession in the U.S., but we're not experiencing that here," said Tracy McDaniel, executive vice president of the Greater Houston Partnership, a business development group. "We exist in a bubble, if you will." Well, pin a rose on you and all the people in Houston that have benefited from the price of $130 barrel oil and $4 gas, you greedy bastard. We don't care if the rest of the nation's suffering. We got new Maseratis and we got lower taxes and everything because we've screwed every one of you filling up your car. Yes, we have. Oh, we're screwed you so good.
How's it feel?
Yeah, $4 a gas, a gallon gas. I'm going to fill up my Hummer. Oh, yeah. And, of course, oil. You've heard the mantra by now. Doesn't make any difference how many leases they haven't explored yet. Doesn't make any difference that we had the Exxon Valdez spill. Doesn't mean, by the way, I see Exxon got the judgment cut down from $2.5 billion down to $500 million. Because the poor boys at ExxonMobil, they just couldn't afford to pay the whole thing, and the government felt sorry for them, you know. What was it, 1,400 miles of coastland that just ruined because of that? Let's see, how many miles of coastland are there around Florida? Probably in the neighborhood of that. Somewhere, not too far off. Yeah. But you've all heard the mantra, drill. Let's drill, 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 drill. Let's just drill and drill some more. Let's drill all up and down the West Coast, all up and down the East Coast. We'll put big-ass flags on the top of every one of the oil rigs. It'll be the great American thing to do. Let's drill. Let's drill out in the Gulf of Mexico. There's 3,800 wells out there now. Let's drill 20,000 wells out in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's just drill every place. Let's go up in the Anwar. To hell with those caribou. Let's drill every place we can. Now, let me be clear. I am not against drilling for oil. We need oil. And we're going to continue to need oil for quite some time. And I'll go along with that. I will not go along with drilling in special places like Anwar and all that. There's a lot of oil drilling that can be done in land that's already leased and in the grids that are already leased out in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, what they forgot to say yesterday when they were complaining about the price of oil leases is these people don't go around leasing land that they don't think there's oil under. I think I explained that yesterday. But has anybody got any look into the future on the Republican side? I mean, have you heard them talk about alternative energy? I mean, yes, we heard McCain the other day. We heard McCain. You know, is this guy, I said on the program, I know I'm jumping around here a lot, but I know I said on the program a couple of weeks ago that one of the things I have found out about John McCain that surprised me a little bit in all the research I've done about him is that the guy's not very bright. Really and truly, I'm not kidding. I do mean that. John McCain is just not very bright. And he's, I don't know who's advising him on this stuff, but he gets up there and he says, well, if somebody can come up with a battery, you know, big battery, you can run a car and everything, be efficient and everything, we're going to give him a prize of $300 million. Yes, sir. We're going to give him $300 million. Now, first of all, he's going to get the $300 million out of pork somewhere, some pork that he knows about that I don't know about. I mean, I'm not saying there's not any pork. But John McCain said he's going to get the $300 million and he's going to give it to whoever comes up with this battery. Well, John McCain, I got news for you. I have news for you. People have been looking for this battery for a long time, and if somebody does come up with a battery like that, and they have been, and have been trying to do it, don't you think that commercially it'd be worth a whole lot more than $300 million, John? Don't you think if somebody came up with a battery like that, that they wouldn't be screwing around with any $300 mil from the government when they can put that baby on the market and make a ton of money? I don't know. It just seemed kind of silly to me. Just silly. But drill, 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 drill. That's all that the people can come up with. We've got a drill. We've got a drill. I can tell you, and there have been studies done on this, that if they drilled, let's say, straight west of me right now, straight west of where I am at this very moment, three-quarters of the way down the coast of Florida, and I'm about, as we speak right now, maybe three-quarters of a mile from the Gulf of Mexico. If they drill out there off the coast, say 25, 30 miles, or whatever it is they want to do, and there would be a spill, like that Exxon Valdez thing, if there'd be a big spill, the value of property in this neighborhood would be, overnight, be worth nothing. That's right. The tourism here would be gone. The only way people have of making a decent living around here, most of them is off the service industries and the tourism and all. It'd be gone. They might as well shut down the airport. It'd be gone. But don't worry, we can drill safely. We'd never have a spill. Really, we promise. We promise we'll never have a spill. No, we'll never do it. They just can't get over the fact that the peak production in the whole world right now, somewhere around, I think, 85 million barrels a day. 85 million barrels a day. That's for the whole shooting match, the whole world combined, all the oil production, somewhere around 85 million barrels a day. While at the same time, the demand for oil is around 86 million barrels a day. And they're pumping more oil than ever. But it's not enough. And when you stop and think about it, about the development that's going on in India and China and other places and the increase in population in the world, the gap between what they're pumping and what they're going to get is going to get wider and wider and wider. No more Sunday drives for people. 866-546-5254. But really, John, a $300 million prize for that battery. I don't know. I don't know. And what about the story? How many of you have heard the story? They tried to get it going really good. No, Laura Ingraham has talked about it. All the right-wing talking heads, brilliant people all, they've all talked about how China is drilling within 50 to 60 miles from the coast of Florida. Yeah. Did you know that? In cooperation with the Cubans? The amount of recent crap about drilling for oil from the wing nuts is amazing. And so they dragged China into this, and it's one of the biggest lies we've heard in a long time. They're trying to argue that since China is drilling within 50 or 60 miles from the coast of Florida, we should be able to do the same. And everybody that doesn't want to do that, of course, we're all villains. We're anti-American, treason, no good, seditionist bastards, like we were when the start of the war. So the McClatchy newspapers went and dug and found the truth about this, like you would think any big network or newspaper might do. And the right-wingers are saying drilling is underway 60 miles off Florida. The drilling is being done by China in cooperation with Cuba, which is drilling closer to South Florida than the U.S. companies are. Well, the McClatchy people dug into this. And like I said, this is a lie being passed on by every right-winger that can get their hands on the story. China is not drilling in Cuba's Gulf of Mexico waters, period. He's Jorge Piñon, an energy fellow with the Center of Hemispheric Policy at the University of Miami and an expert in oil exploration in the Gulf of Mexico. Western diplomats in Havana tell McClatchy that there, to the best of their knowledge, there is no Chinese drilling in or around Cuba. I've never heard anything about this, said one diplomat from a country in the hemisphere. Believe me, if they were drilling, it's not, you'd see it from a cruise ship. I mean, the cruise ships, you go all around, you wouldn't miss it, believe me. There's no drilling. Let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Hi, Kevin.
Yeah, if they were, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, exactly. It's international waters.
Exactly.
you're exactly right. What would we do about it? We'd do nothing about it if they were. Actually, I guess they could drill out in the Gulf of Mexico if they wanted to as well, out in the middle of it. Out in the middle of it. They drill any place they want.
If they have the money and they, you know, can't do a darn thing.
No. What's the limit? Is it what, 7 miles? I'm not sure anymore.
Because we do it off the coast of God knows where all over the world.
Yeah.
It's because it's a Chinese corporation and a Cuban corporation, not an American corporation.
Well, now that's different. If it's an American company, we'd be allowed to do it, but they shouldn't be. You know, that's the...
we're fighting a war.
But we're Americans, and we do what we want to.
Yeah?
That's the case they would make.
Oh, boy. Ignorance.
you heard that story, haven't you, about the Chinese drilling?
Oh, yeah.
You know, anybody with a sport fishing boat between here, it's not that far. From here to Cuba.
Oh, yeah. Well, don't forget, I'm a former Florida resident.
Yeah.
I know.
You don't realize until you've lived here a while, maybe gone back and forth a couple of times. Now, I haven't been in Cuba, but, you know, take a few cruises when you go around.
Oh, yeah.
Circle Cuba and all that. You don't realize just how doggone close it really is.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's really, at one time they were planning a train track from, you know, I was watching the History Channel somewhere.
Oh, was Flagler going to do that?
Yeah.
Oh my God, a train? Yeah, I don't see why. That's fairly decent water and fairly shallow water down through there.
Yeah.
Down through the straits of Florida that they talk about. I don't think a lot of people understand, and folks, maybe a lot of you do, but like if you're on a cruise ship and you go down to the Caymans or something, which is on the south side of Cuba, or you go over to over to Mexico or someplace like that. Oh, what is that godforsaken place in Ocho Rios, Jamaica, and some of the places the cruise ship dump you out? You barely get out of the sight of Cuba until you can start seeing the U.S. and vice versa. I mean, it's not that far.
It's not. It really isn't. You know, it's like from Key West. If they were to build a bridge, it'd be an hour and a half away.
That's right. That's right. That's all it would be. So, I hope they don't drill out there in the shipping lanes, you know, if you're on a cruise ship.
I really don't want it drilled, to be honest with you, for the environment.
I don't either.
Okay, but believe you me, if it comes down to it, you know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah, I mean, let's be fair. Just because it's not my country right or wrong, it's my country if we're right. That's all.
Well, like me, more than country... humanity.
That's right.
That's and the globe. We're all in this together. That's where my higher loyalty lies.
Well, it must be. And you know, people just shoot you and me for having this conversation.
Why,
you commie, no good socialistic.
Why do you think I moved back to New York?
Oh, then you know then about the crackers, right?
I lived in Volusia County, the county that gave Bush his presidency.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. Oh, my.
Okay. I've encountered
your
more colorful citizenry.
Collier County, just not too far away from where I am, where Naples is, it's one of the reddest areas in the country.
Well, I can understand them being red, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But people don't understand. I moved to Florida just about 12 years ago. And I'd vacationed here once, twice, three times every year to this very area where I live now. And I, in all that time, had never encountered the locals at all. Was at the beach, the hotel.
There are no locals down there.
Condo, yeah. And so when I moved here and I decided to get involved in politics, it hit me like a board right in the face that if you got in a conversation with somebody about politics, they automatically assumed that you were a diehard Republican. I mean, they just automatically assumed it.
But again, Guy, I can understand, like, where you live,
but
that's one of the wealthiest places in the country.
Yeah. Not in my house.
Money, but it's one of the wealthiest counties.
It is.
Okay. I don't know your finances, but I'm just saying.
I do not live in Port Royal in Naples, let me tell you that.
Okay. And I can somewhat comprehend, like I said, if you're making over $400,000 a year, I can understand you being a Republican. If you're making less than that, I'm at a total, you know.
It is. It's just not understandable. It's that authoritarian thing to a lot of these people. They've got to have their lives run for them and told what to do. But Volusia County, eh?
Yeah. Well, that's where you start to encounter the native Floridians.
Yeah.
That's even starting to change.
Yeah. Oh, yes, it is.
You got to go up to Flagler or not now.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, a lot of Florida. I swear to you, one time I saw on late night television Alabama the way Florida used to be.
Alabama the way Florida used to be?
Yeah.
See, I remember Florida when it used to be. My grandfather moved to Florida in 1954. And so we came down to visit him every year. He moved over by Kissimmee.
Oh, yeah.
And which was...
That's all changed.
Which was hell on earth, I thought, in those days. I'll never forget pulling into my grandpa's place for the first time. And somebody... I thought they put one of those things across the road like the cops do, those rubber hoses across the road to measure the speed. Have you ever seen those?
No.
Yeah, they put a rubber hose on and it's hooked up to this machine, and when you drive over it, it can tell how fast you drove over it and give them the speed, or else count traffic. They do it with those, too. And so we drove over one of those, and it wasn't one of those. It was a snake. And I thought, you know, I don't know that I'm going to like this Florida very much, but I've never had very many encounters with snakes here.
But you see, like, I was in for a culture shock because I'm a born and bred New Yorker.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And I grew up going to Florida, but that was Miami, which is New York South.
Well, how did she not make it to Miami? The New Yorkers all live in Miami. Well, a lot of them, Fort Lauderdale.
You know, coming to Orlando now was a total culture shock.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I remember when Orlando was just a sleepy little town. I do remember that.
Yeah. You know, yes, we would come up for Disney, but then go back to, you know, South.
Yeah. When I moved here, Disney wasn't even... when I first started coming here, Disney was a dream yet. And I think they just celebrated, what was it, their 25th? I don't know what... I think maybe 25th anniversary. No, maybe more than that. Not too long ago. Disney World here, anyway. But we'd been to Disneyland lots of times when I was a kid, but had never been to Disney. Well, Disney World wasn't here. It just wasn't here.
Don't remember Florida before Disney World.
Yeah, well, I do. And
that's how middle-aged I am.
Well, there wasn't Route 75 coming down here. There wasn't Route 95 coming down here for a long, long time. And, you know, the thing that caused Florida to grow up like it did was the invention of home air conditioning.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. Without that, this would still be... This would be still something like, what was that?
Stop over on the way to Cuba.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that famous movie about one of the places in the Keys? Not Isla Mirada, but...
Key Largo.
Yeah. This would still be like that movie, Key Largo, if it wasn't for home air conditioning. Remember all those guys walking around in white linen suits with the hats on? Sweating there. Yeah, you were in for a culture shock. That's a fact.
Well, my dad used to tell me because when he was younger, my late dad, he used to go to Havana, and he was a merchant seaman. So, he would pull into New York, and sometimes from New York, they would take a train straight to Havana. That train car would load into a ship and go to Havana straight, straight on through.
I'd love to go to Cuba.
Beautiful.
I really would. I don't think a lot of people understand just how big Cuba is.
If you were turning alongside, it'll stretch from Maine to Florida.
It's very, very long. Very long. And I would just love to go over there, but of course we don't have that opportunity. I guess
that will change in a few years.
I know people from this area that have gone over in their boats, in their private boats, and they're careful not to get caught, but they do go, and it, you know, unless they're bringing back a bunch of cigars or something, the Coast Guard stops them. There's nothing they can do. They have, you know.
Well, what you do is go through a third country like Bahamas, Jamaica, Mexico.
Yeah, yeah. But,
you know, and they really don't mess with you.
Well, yeah, and Americans can go to Canada, I think, and fly to Cuba. You could anyway. I don't know if you still can or not.
Also, if you want to get Cuban cigars, that casino in downtown Miami.
Oh, the
Indian Reservation.
The Indian Reservation. Yeah, I'm trying to think of the name of it. The Seminoles own it.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name. Oh, well. It's not important, I guess. Miami being one of the great cultural experiences people will ever have. There isn't
I
any
love
question.
Miami.
I do too. There's every culture in Miami that you can possibly imagine. All the South. You go through Miami, especially a certain time of the year when they have festivals going on all year long. And this is, you know this, but I'm letting the audience know this in case they care. You run across signs every week of the year that they're having the Argentinian festival, the Brazilian festival, the Chilean festival, amazing.
Well, you see, that's what, you know, I'm a huge advocate of urban living.
Mm-hmm.
I believe people are meant to live in large numbers and groups. And congregate.
Well, I think you're probably right. I think we're all going to do that here shortly.
Well, the part of the reason what's driving up real estate, spotted the downturn in New York, particularly Brooklyn, is because people can't afford the gas anymore.
Mm-hmm.
At least when you put money into a house, at least you may get something back. When you put your money in a car, it's gone.
Yeah, I know mine sits in the garage a whole lot more than it used to.
Yeah.
A whole lot more.
New York, 24/7, you can always go around the corner store, 100 feet from your front door.
Yeah.
Get something like the basics, bread, milk, whatever.
Well, I love New York. I do. I never wanted to live in Manhattan or anything, but I love the place. I was there right before Christmas this year, and I was there again about, I don't know, a month ago or something like that. And I love the town. I would probably enjoy living there for right downtown. I want to be down there in Fifth Avenue in one of those penthouses for.
You're a man of high taste.
Well, yeah. And while I was there, I thought, well, I'll look this over. And I got a real estate flyer someplace right next door to the Trump Tower, and I noticed that. In one of the big towers there, I think it was in Trump Tower, that they had apartments available starting at only $18,000 a month.
Oh,
And I thought, what a deal. What a deal. Oh, my God.
One can dream, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. Oh, my. Starting at only $18,000 a month.
The thing is, New York may not be the cleanest city, but, you know, like Bob said, Bob can say it's a city that works.
It does. And
24/7.
I walked, and the last two times I've been here, I walked all over the place, and I'll tell you, I always felt safe. I don't know how you could not feel safe because there was a cop on every corner. Never seen anything like it.
Well, back in the 70s, I think a lot of people are judging, New York now from the images that they used to see.
You were right.
And these, like, the Death Wish movies with Charles Bronson and all that nonsense.
Same way they still look at Pittsburgh, and the same way they still look at Cleveland, cities that have rejuvenated themselves so well. You're right. They do look at New York that way. But, my God, nowadays you walk down to, say, from Central Park down to Broadway, which isn't that far. And you're in Times Square. There are more cops than there are people. So it's at night. Anything. I mean, I never felt like any problem at all.
Oh yeah.
Hey Kevin, thanks for calling. Really good to talk to you. Now that we've explained to them about crackers and all that kind of stuff. And if any of you want to know,
probably know more than I do.
If anybody wants to know about crackers in Florida, call me. I'll let you know. It'll be our secret. Thanks, Kevin. Good to hear from you.
No problem. Bye.
Ah, yes. Florida crackers. 866-546-5254. Tomorrow we're going to report to you on who did what on this telecom immunity bill and who got paid what by which telecom company for their vote. Interesting story we have to tell about that. What do you think? You know, a lot of you know what I've been predicting about this election, that I've told a lot of my friends and political allies and everybody where I live here that I talk to regularly. I tell them what I think about the election. They all look at me, well, I don't know. I don't know. I think you're wrong. I think Barack Obama is going to kick John McCain's ass in this election, and I do not think it's going to be close. I'm on record as saying that from the very, since Obama's been the nominee, I would have felt the same way about Hillary. It doesn't matter. You know, we had this poll come out this past week that showed Obama had a 15-point lead over McCain. And everybody said, that's a fluke. That's a fluke. It can't be because there's another poll that says it's only 6. Well, it turns out the poll that where it was only 6, it wasn't necessarily of all registered voters, and it was a very small sample. But the Newsweek one was a large sample, and it was registered voters, and it showed 15 points. Now, the Times Bloomberg poll, which is a serious poll, comes out and said 49% of registered voters favor Senator Barack Obama, while only 37 supports John Sidney McCain. Think about it. In a two-man contest, the Times Bloomberg poll, a very reliable poll, says Obama 49, McCain 37. And if you put Nader and Bob Barr in there, Obama gets a 15-point edge. So that's two polls with a 15-point edge. I'm telling you. Now, that doesn't mean you can stay home on Election Day. But I'm telling you, Obama is going to kick his ass. I absolutely am assured of that. As you know, I have gone on and on and on and on. About these polls and all that, I honestly believe Obama is going to kick his ass. And rightly so. Because I'll say it, and I don't care. I'd say it to my best friend. It doesn't matter to me, because my best friend is not a Republican, nor would my best friend ever be a Republican, because I wouldn't have a best friend that was a Republican, okay? Quite simply, that's how it is. And let me qualify that somewhat. I know people who claim that they are Republicans. And after talking to them for a while, I go, no, you're not a Republican. Yes, I am. No, you're not. No, you're not. I've qualified you, and you may think you're a Republican, but you're not. At least a neocon, you're not. But the polls are looking good for Obama. A lot can happen between now and November. I understand that. They keep bringing up the Willie Horton thing back in 88 with Mike. So that changed around pretty good. But anyway, it's not going to happen this time. We've got a great candidate. He got a nice wife, nice family. He's been vetted over and over again. They're going to smear him. I mean, we all know that. We all understand that. They're going to smear him till hell won't have it. But Barack Obama will not lose this election. I don't care what you think of him one way or another, if you're really for Obama or not, I don't know. But I'm just saying, Barack Obama, this is his to lose. And he's going to have to work hard to lose it, I'll tell you that much right now. I did find my notes on this U.S. sugar sale. It is 187,000 acres. And the state of Florida is going to pay $1.7 billion of it. They're going to buy the U.S. sugar land and production facilities, including the new mill they just put in and a railroad operation. And Charlie Crist said the deal was, quote, as monumental as the creation of the nation's first national park, Yellowstone. Well, I could almost go along with him on that. It would be monumental. And I'm in favor of that. Absolutely in favor of that. But don't call me names for wanting to nationalize oil company when the state's going to buy 187,000 acres from a private industry. Okay, so there. My, time is flying by today. Of course, we're hearing new talk every day of threats against, of military strikes against Iran. And let's face it, let's tell it what like it is. That's nothing more than to protect our interest, the oil interest there, and to protect Israel. If we don't do it, Israel's going to. I think they've made that clear. I'm not sure that they have capability to do as much of it as they'd like to, because they don't have bombers like we have. They don't have the capability with bombers to do what we could do, and so they're going to get us to help them do it. And but unless you want to get sucked in once again with this gang who couldn't shoot straight, the Bush administration I'm always talking about when I say that, that started this Iraq occupation, then you might have to agree that where Iran is concerned, we need diplomatic engagement and a little less saber rattling. And that is, I guess, if we had a State Department to do some diplomatic engagement, which I don't think we have. Condoleezza Rice being the most inept Secretary of State in the history of this country. I haven't studied all of them, but I can't imagine anybody being more incompetent and more inept than Condoleezza Rice. And I know the argument that you can't have good diplomacy unless you back it up with a military threat. We all know that. But the neocons are continuing their argument that we can't take the military option off the table. Well, how well can you negotiate if you're sitting at the table pointing a gun at somebody? And why do these people seem to enjoy threatening other countries so much? And they do. I mean, is it a power grab? Is it some sort of a macho thing? I really don't get it. I never have. But to my way of thinking, this whole on the table, off the table idea is just absurd. And the reality is that the U.S. has more than 200,000 troops in the region, in Iraq and Afghanistan and in the rest of the Gulf states, and a huge naval presence in the Persian Gulf. And so our military is in full display to the Iranians all the time, and therefore they see it as an implicit threat. And it's there if Iran should choose to do something that's completely crazy. But the question of keeping it on the table, as I always say, is really a question of whether you continue to blatantly threaten military force, which history shows has never been really all that helpful. And I would suggest that the whole idea that blatant military threats has to be part of effective negotiations is an idea that simply does not jive with past experiences that we've had. We never used military threats when we negotiated with the Russians or the Chinese during the Cold War. We didn't do it. They knew we had our guns back home. They knew we had our missiles. We never threatened them. We just made it clear what our limits were, what our boundaries were, and that worked pretty well. But we never, in negotiations, threatened these people. And you know, think about it. We've negotiated with the Soviets. We've negotiated with the Somali warlords, the Afghan warlords, the Serbs, the Bosnians. I'm sure there's some more in there I can't think of. And those experiences show that when explicit military threats were part of the negotiations would fail. So we should just stick the military threat back in the drawer, keep it quiet. The Iranians know it's there. And we just don't have to keep waving our sabers in their face. We just don't have to do it. And I wonder about the competency. I wonder about the intellectual capacity of these people that keep doing that. These are the... Any of you remember the Our Gang comedies? Do you? You youngsters probably don't. Remember Butch? Butch the bully? Always would roll up his sleeve and whoop somebody. That's who the United States has become. We've become Butch the bully of the Our Gang comedies. The little rascals, if you will. And I don't like that. I don't like that. Well, we're down to the end of the program once again, and I don't know where the time went. Moved on pretty fast today, and I'm grateful that the weather cooperated and we didn't have a big old nasty storm like I thought we were going to have here. It somehow passed us by, so that's a good thing. Do keep in mind that you got Mark Levine coming up next. You won't hear a smarter, more well-informed guy than Mark Levine, and you got Bob coming up after that. Man, what a lineup you got here on the Head On Radio Network, and I mean that. I have great respect for the other hosts on this network, and I probably know Mark the best. Mark and I have broken bread and gotten together a few times, and it's always a pleasure. Good guy. So you stay tuned for his show. I know you'll enjoy it no matter what the subject is today because he makes it that way. He works hard at it too. Thanks so much for listening here on the Guy James Show today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. And thanks to Billy Shears for his being the music director and picking out the great tunes for us. And thanks to all of you. And don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. And I'll see you tomorrow.